Disc 9.
Michelle obediently took her seat, as did the others, except Sam, who hoisted herself on the edge of the table. They all knew that Jeremy had been working hard and that he was excited about his presentation. Michelle hoped that he could deliver something to equal his excitement. He glanced down at Summer, who was examining a broken fingernail, then began, "Everyone all been to the bathroom? I'm just asking for 15 minutes of your time. Then you can harass me with any questions you want or just tell me I'm crazy. Though I don't think you will. Last time I updated you all together, I was working on finding free information, information that's in the public domain, to package and resell online. Let me give you a little background. I know a lot of you don't need it, but I want us all on the same web page, if you catch my drift. The first step that Summer and I took was to start building our lists. Companies spend years putting together those customer lists. Used to be direct mail. Now more and more it's email. Summer and I figured right out of the gate that we didn't have time to do that. I'm no math genius, Summer interrupted, but even I know that 2 years doesn't go into 90 days. Jeremy seemed irritated at this comment, which puzzled Michelle, but she let it slide. Jeremy went on. I have been on this project 24/7. I'm even keeping my bathroom breaks to a minimum. But, he tapped the side of his head, as the result of this unprecedented dedication, we have managed to acquire a group of email lists totaling almost 1 million names. Michelle led the applause. How in the name of Pete did you pull that off? Renee asked. I'd like to say easy, and it does seem that way, now that it's done. His grin was broad and self-satisfied. But let me back up a little first. While we were acquiring these lists, we were also looking for some terrific information that we could package and sell. I was checking out some government websites because, he coughed quickly into his fist, well, I have a little outstanding debt with Uncle Sam, but I'm working to pay it off. Now, coincidence? You be the judge, but wait till you see what I found. He lifted the top, blank page of the nearest flip chart to reveal a list of several titles. How to get a great deal on a new car. Marketing strategies for growing businesses. 9 ways to lower your auto insurance costs. 12 ways to lower your homeowner's insurance costs. PowerSmart, easy tips to save money and the planet. Clean up your own credit, how to dispute credit report errors. 66 ways to save money, practical ways to cut everyday costs. Investment swindles, how they work and how to avoid them. 10 questions to ask when choosing a financial planner. These articles are available to anyone who wants them without cost. That is, free. Gratis gratuit. Do you know why? He didn't wait for an answer. Because they were compiled at taxpayer expense. They're public domain. That means that anyone can use this information in any way they wish, including Jeremy Cavalieri and the intrepid Millionaire Eagles. So what's your plan? Michelle couldn't help but ask. To copy these reports and sell them? She remembered their earlier conversation about groups with special interests and his idea to sell information to the members of those groups. That was more or less the original idea, Jeremy replied, looking at his list with love. It's still part of it. This is just a taste of the financial info we found. Once we found these articles, it clicked for me right away. Money is our theme. You remember, we were joking about targeting chocoholics. But money is probably the single area of greatest interest to most people, except maybe sex. I'm not sure about that, Renee said uncomfortably. Being around all these women has turned his head, Summer commented rather dryly. Let the boy go on, Sam said. It just made sense, Jeremy said to Summer. We're learning how to make $1 million. Why not target people who are as passionate about making money as we are? So we started compiling a very useful little book, Money Loves You, that we could sell over the internet. How do you find people like that? Michelle wondered aloud. There are thousands of e-zines devoted to money subjects, Jeremy answered. Tell us about e-zines, Sam said, just in case anyone feels embarrassed about asking. An e-zine is an electronic magazine sent out via email. The magazine comparison is a little grandiose, but here's how it usually works. I go check out a website, and they offer to put me on their email list for a free subscription to their online newsletter. Then, on a weekly or sometimes even daily basis, I get an email from them. It might just be an inspirational message, or it might constitute an entire newsletter. I get a few of those, Courtney said. I just didn't know what they were called. I get them from small business associations I belong to. Exactly, Jeremy continued. Summer and I have contacted the owners of dozens of these e-zines and have made arrangements to joint venture with them. Why would they let you use their mailing lists? Michelle asked. Well, I was working on that one. Then our Queen Eagle here, he bowed toward Sam, took us out for that little card distributing adventure. Do you remember how someone offered Summer $1,000 to mentor with her? Summer puckered. When she said that, when we were at the booth at the diner, everything fell into place in a nanosecond. Here we were, going to sell some kind of book for, say, $10 apiece. But to generate $1 million, we would have to sell 100,000 copies. So instead, what we're going to do is sell Seminars with Sam. The actual title is Enlightened Millionaire Coaching. It's a powerful 2-day seminar with the Queen herself. The price is a mere $1,000. Sam is donating her time in exchange for our tithing 10% to Sam's designated charity. So you've just dropped the idea of the money book? Renee frowned, looking at her watch. No way. Here's how it works. We have 1 million names from a total of about 20 e-zines that deal one way or the other with small businesses or financial planning, or just personal money management. Over the next week, for a share of the profits, all of those e-zines are going to offer our book, Money Loves You, for free to anyone who goes to our website. We expect, conservatively, that we'll get 25,000 to 50,000 people to download the free book. Then, with viral marketing, it could double or triple that number. Our goal is to gather 100,000 names, and then we'll send them all the free book, of course. But then that 100,000 becomes our mailing list. Within 2 days, we email each and every one of them with the irresistible offer to work with our very own Samantha Ann Monroe. At $1,000 a pop, we only need 1,000 of those 100,000 to say yes. That's only 1%. 1,000 people at $1,000 each is $1 million. Phew, Renee whistled. I like those odds. Listen, gang, I have to run to work. I'll catch up with everyone after school. She slung her purse over her shoulder and headed out the door. School, Michelle thought, her heart aching. And just a few doors down from Renee's students were her own. I'm good at keeping a secret, aren't I? Sam grinned. Jeremy and I are thinking beyond the original seminars idea, too. We're going to offer a year of mentoring with yours truly for $5,000. I think there'll be a few takers. Sam, don't be so modest, Jeremy said. It'll be a life-changing experience and worth far more than we're charging. You see? Jeremy spread out his hands. It's the simplest solution. It's Occam's razor. 75 days. The office building of the second largest toy company in the world was located in a suburb of a small city just outside of Providence, Rhode Island. It was a 2-story brick building in the style of the early 60s with clean, straight lines. To Michelle, it looked like the Emerald City at the end of the yellow brick road. She had arrived with Tilly after a tiring trip. Even though Denver was a hub, they had had to change planes in Chicago. And Michelle had never fully appreciated the challenges one faces when one is confined to a wheelchair, in spite of helpful airport personnel and the prevalence of wheelchair ramps. Tilly, however, had remained cheerful throughout. "Isn't it nice to get on first?" she had said to Michelle as a gate agent pushed her down the jetway. Tilly's mechanical wheelchair would not easily fold for travel. Now Michelle said a prayer of thanks for the Americans with Disabilities Act as she pressed the large button that would keep the automatic door open while she pushed Tilly into the building. At the front desk, they both received adhesive visitors' badges. As she stuck hers on the lapel of her black suit, Michelle regarded her friend with affection. Tilly had put spots of blush on her papery cheeks, spots that weren't very well blended in, and she had applied red lipstick to her thin lips. In her lap, she protectively held the prototype that she and her friend Eleanor had made. What it lacked in elegance, it made up for in impact. At least Michelle thought so. It was a bright purple bear with an abnormally large torso, even for a teddy, and the seams were strikingly crooked. But there was so much love on its crudely sewn face, with the black buttons for eyes, that Michelle felt a twinge every time she looked at it. Nevertheless, it was also clear to her that they never would have gotten this meeting had it not been for Tilly's connections in the company. In the end, Jeremy had helped with the electronics part, and Michelle's nervousness receded when she thought of the moment when they would play the message that Courtney had recorded to her own son in her soothing contralto. Down to the right of the lobby, about 100 feet, was a conference room. Tilly knew the way, and Michelle followed her. When Michelle held the door for Tilly again, she was surprised to find the room smaller and simpler than what she had imagined. It was furnished with just a table and chairs, a television, and a VCR. There wasn't even anything on the walls. Inside, they were greeted by two members of the executive committee who were already waiting. Jill Ranson, a petite woman in her 50s, head of the game division, and Paul Marshall, a young man in his late 30s, in charge of international toy acquisition. As others came in, many gave Tilly a hug. Everyone there had either worked with her in some capacity or had heard of her since coming on board. Their warm welcome confirmed what Tilly so matter-of-factly said about herself, that her reputation preceded her. If she said a toy was going to be a winner, 9 times out of 10, it was. Several of the top executives were late from various different meetings, so there was a good 20 minutes of gossip and catching up. Michelle didn't talk much. Unlike Tilly, she didn't know anyone, but most of all, her nervousness was returning. How could Tilly be so relaxed? It was mean-spirited to think that it was only because the custody of her children didn't ride on this. After all, Tilly had worked as hard as anyone on Michelle's team. With the arrival of the woman in charge of new product development, the CEO of the company gave Tilly a brief introduction and turned the meeting over to her. Tilly held up the teddy bear as if it were her new grandchild. "Ladies and gentlemen, and I must say I'm glad to see more ladies now than I did 50 years ago." Michelle closed her eyes. "I've wondered for the last decade if I had one more toy in me, and it looks like I do. Here it is." Michelle opened her eyes again. Even in the unflattering fluorescent light, Tilly glowed. As if the very frailty of her skin were letting her soul shine through. No longer a shriveled, disabled woman, she was manifesting on the outside what Michelle had come to see on the inside. "You all know that I've always wanted to bring toys to the market that would not just make money, but would benefit children and their parents. You've seen a whole heck of a lot of stuffed animals, and in the past few years, you've seen every mechanical gizmo we ever could have imagined. Why, my granddaughter has a little CD that will teach her chess. But this is something special." Tilly cradled the bear next to her cheek and gave it a squeeze, as if on impulse. and from the inside of the creature came the gentle sound of Courtney's voice. "Honey, I'm thinking of you right now. I hope you're going to have sweet, sweet dreams." A hush fell over the room as the rest of the message played. Although Courtney was not the actual mother of anyone present, she had read it with her own son in mind, and the evident love of a mother for her child permeated the room like a pleasant fragrance. After a perfectly timed pause, Tilly continued on in a more practical vein, describing the benefits. The design of the teddy bear was unique, colorful, and fun. The body was shaped like a pillow, so a child could take it to bed. But the combination of stuffed animal and personalized message was what put it over the top. She helped the committee members imagine what it would be like to be able to leave a special message for their small son or daughter, who would be able to listen to it over and over again, a story, a poem, a song, a prayer. She told them about the new rage of picture frames that grandparents from all over the world had been buying by the millions. Picture frames that were talking, because a grandparent can leave a message for the family with a picture of grandma or grandpa. This was even more powerful, because a small child can't hug a picture frame. If any one of you here has young children, and I mean children who haven't turned into teenagers and discovered that you're not really the sun and the moon after all, then I'll bet you have to leave them at home to travel once in a while. Every day, you just have to leave them when you go to work. Imagine your child missing you desperately, and all she needed to do was press a little button, and there you were. One of the older men present chuckled. "I'm flattered by the implication, Tilly. But heck, my kids are in their 30s. Tilly looked at him sharply. "Think about your grandchildren, then." In the brief silence that followed, Michelle discreetly scanned all the faces in the room. They were mesmerized. But Tilly had warned Michelle that this was only the first, if crucial, stage. They would have to anticipate and draw out any objections that might come down the line, because if they weren't voiced here and now, they would be voiced later, either by the committee, by the wholesalers, by the retailers, or the consumers. Tilly began by raising and answering some possible objections. This got the committee rolling. The woman who was in charge of new product development raised her hand to speak up. "You know, I've always had the feeling that things like this are almost kind of like mind control. Maybe I'm the only person who thinks this way, but I'm just a little concerned about that." Michelle said another prayer of thanks, this time for how well Tilly had prepared her. She jumped in with an answer. "If you want to talk about mind control, think about the fact that children on average in this country spend over 50 hours per week sitting in front of the television. Now, that's mind control. Don't you think that parents should be able to control at least 1 minute of their child's life? A minute that they record? It's time for parents to regain control of the programming, and it starts with this minute that they record for their children." A gentleman in a bright yellow tie with miniature Mr. Potato Heads on it, commented, "Some studies I've seen suggest that women are reluctant to record messages on devices like these. They're perfectionists about anything to do with being a mom, and they don't want to do it unless it's absolutely perfect. It's almost like writer's block." "Let the dads do it then," another man joked, though all it got him were a few annoyed glances from the women present. Tilly ignored the joke and the glances while responding to the concern. "We're going to include with the toy a booklet of 1 minute scripts that parents can use. It covers just about every blessed thing." The booklet would contain 1 minute bedtime stories, modern and classic, words to favorite songs for those daring enough to sing, and perhaps most important, a number of scripts aimed at common childhood fears such as the dark, disasters, and death, and common difficulties such as bedwetting and shyness. Tilly assured them that this last category had been prepared by nationally known psychologists. Michelle pressed her lips together to keep from smiling. They were still in the idea stage with the psychologists. Tilly was forging ahead brightly. We'll even have more scripts available on the website. The parent can go online and download them for free. She winked. Another woman, a sharp-featured brunette, expressed concern that it might be a little too technically advanced for some parents who were electronically challenged. Michelle was ready again. I know that it used to be difficult for people to record their own voices on various different machines. But the way we designed this is much easier than an answering machine, and 10 times easier than programming the voicemail message on your cell phone, which almost everybody has to do these days. With the touch of just one button, a person can record and erase a message easily and simply. The brunette seemed only partly mollified. What about kids going into the store and recording a message on the toys that are available on the shelves? Because I imagine you're going to want to have the ability for a parent to try this out, aren't you? But another gentleman, who had introduced himself earlier as being in the product development department, spoke up. That's something that we have a lot of experience with. We've learned our lessons there, and what we do is basically provide a simple 10-second message that a parent can listen to in a demo mode. He looked around the table. You probably already know what Amy's worried about. Teenagers coming through and recording nasty messages on the Bears. That's not going to happen with Hasbro toys. And, even after purchase, we can make it so that parents will be able to control and lock in the messages that they want so that nobody else can change them. The brainstorming went on for a while, with Michelle and Tilly throwing out as many objections as the committee. As these concerns were raised and dispensed of, the level of excitement rose palpably. Michelle realized on a more visceral level that she was in a room full of seasoned professionals as the ideas for marketing, packaging, and design bounced across the table like tennis balls. Somehow, invisibly, the meeting moved from a discussion of if to when. But when Tilly told them that this bear needed to be in production for availability in less than 90 days, the man in the yellow tie told her that for once she really was crazy, and everyone else enthusiastically agreed. 12 to 18 months is our normal time. Tilly took this part in stride. She had already told Michelle that she knew the people in the company who had what Sam would call make-it-happen power. If the word came down from above that this was a toy that needed to be fast-tracked, then it would happen. None of them in the room could remember a toy that had been fast-tracked in less than 4 months. But Tilly appeared confident that she would be able to prevail. In this mood of triumph, the final part of the meeting was spent brainstorming the name. They went through hundreds of rhyming words until Michelle, who'd been quiet for this part, feeling that the professionals could take over, blurted out, "The Always Together Bear." There was lots of noisy chatter and heads nodding in agreement before she continued talking. When my husband had to leave home on business, which he did all too often, he'd always kiss the children and say to them, "Don't worry, even though you can't see me, just know that I'm always there." Although it was bittersweet for her to say it, Michelle did. The toy will remind the child that mom or dad will always be there, no matter where they may be. And Nikki and Hannah, I'll be with you soon. 73 days. After returning from the meeting with Hasbro, Michelle had taken on the assignment to go down to the county courthouse to research who had defaulted on the payments of their mortgages. Michelle found that literally dozens and dozens of defaults had occurred in the previous 30 days. It was amazing to her. Why would people not make the payments on their homes? And then she remembered how she had not been able to keep the payments current on her own home. With this in mind, she continued looking through the list with greater empathy. Whatever the problems that had caused the owners to fall behind, their properties were certainly diverse. She saw expensive homes, inexpensive homes, condominiums, vacant lots, and townhomes. After about a half an hour of writing down the names and addresses of all these properties, she decided to use her intuition. It felt like an odd leap to take, but she knew that she had to tap into the infinite network, There was really no logical way to sort through this much information. So she went down the pages one by one by one, surrendering as much critical thinking as possible. She skipped many properties with good numbers, simply because they didn't feel right. In the end, she took down the information on three properties out of a total of about 200 different defaults. In turn, one property seemed to stand out among the others. The mortgage on it was $35,000, and, since the payments were 2 months behind, the deadline for the foreclosure was only about 2 weeks away. Michelle copied down the address. It was in a fairly good neighborhood. She decided that she would drive by to see if it was in good condition, too, and try to assess what equity there might be. Later, when Renee asked her how she chose that particular property, she found it almost impossible to put into words. The closest she could come to describing her process was that somehow she saw past the numbers to the story behind them. She did not actually picture the owner, and yet somehow she heard someone calling for help. The owner turned out to be a widow named Jane Jasko. The property was a townhome located in the south part of Riverdale in a neatly landscaped development. The units were in excellent condition, or at least appeared to be from the outside. She noticed for sale signs in several windows. She checked her notes again for confirmation. There was the $35,000 first mortgage, but no other encumbrances. Therefore, whoever owned this unit was 2 weeks away from losing a substantial amount of equity in their property. Michelle approached the front door with some trepidation. She remembered how difficult it had been for her to lose the house after Gideon died, and she remembered the negative experience Summer's mother had in selling her home. She rang the doorbell, then straightened her blouse and skirt while she waited. After a full minute, she rang the bell again. Finally, the door opened to reveal a petite, white-haired woman, slightly stooped, a bewildered and somewhat cantankerous look on her face. She looked a little younger than Tilly, but the ancient house coat she wore and the moldy smells from within the house revealed a life less organized and probably a mind less sharp. Michelle spoke slowly and perhaps a little too loudly. "Good afternoon, ma'am. My name is Michelle Erickson." She quickly produced a driver's license, which the woman ignored. "Are you Mrs. Jasko? Forgive me for bothering you here this afternoon, but I was doing some research down at the county courthouse, and I found that your home was listed as a property that is about ready to be foreclosed on." Mrs. Jasko spoke in the gravelly voice of a longtime smoker, although Michelle neither smelled nor saw any evidence of tobacco use. "You're about the 10th person that's come to tell me that, and I keep telling every one of them that they must be mistaken. I put most of my savings down on this little house when I bought it, and the first thing I do when I get my husband's pension check is to make my monthly payment." She plucked with gnarled fingers at the collar of her housecoat. "So you see, there is no possibility of my home going into foreclosure." "That's the first rejection," Michelle said to herself. "Forgive me, ma'am. I don't blame you for being annoyed at these intrusions, but I truly would hate to see you lose your home because of some misunderstanding. Are you absolutely certain you've been making the payments? Can you show me any canceled checks?" "I'm not going to let you into my house," Mrs. Jasko scowled. She started to close the door. The second rejection. But how to get past this one? Michelle opened her file folder, even as she gently pressed her foot against the bottom of the door. "Ma'am, forgive me, but I have the paperwork right here. I just want to verify that this is your address. Would you please just look at these documents that I have here from the county courthouse?" "I don't have my glasses." Mrs. Jasko looked at the door, as if puzzled that it wasn't closing. "Mrs. Jasko, please, go get your glasses. You need to look at this, because you're going to be in serious trouble if you don't do something about it." Michelle didn't know why this finally turned Mrs. Jasko around. Perhaps she saw it as her best shot at getting rid of Michelle. She made a point of closing the door, but after a few minutes, during which time Michelle worried that she might have had the last word after all, Mrs. Jasko returned with a pair of tortoiseshell reading glasses on her nose. She took the paperwork from Michelle with slightly trembling hands and scanned it, her lips moving as she read. But of course she doesn't understand. The legalese would be beyond her. So Michelle produced a yellow highlighter from her purse and quickly marked a few key phrases, like default notice, delinquent, and forfeiture. As the ominous words penetrated Mrs. Jasko's understanding, she looked up and said, her gravelly voice rather plaintive now, "Are you absolutely certain that this is an official government document? I've been warned that people will try to fool seniors with fake documents." Michelle spoke from her heart. "I'm absolutely certain, ma'am. We're talking about your home here, and I truly want to help you." Mrs. Jasko put crooked fingers to her forehead. "I just don't understand how this could be." Michelle had a guess. Now that Mrs. Jasko seemed a little less mistrustful of her, she renewed a request. "Could I see your records?" This time, Mrs. Jasko let her into the house. On the inside, Michelle discovered further signs of neglect. Glancing at the kitchen, off to her right, she saw greasy walls and peeling linoleum. And as they entered the living room, she observed the stained carpet, the dirty drapes, and a layer of dust thick enough to make snowmen. Mrs. Jasko took Michelle to a card table covered with a series of piles of papers. On closer inspection, Michelle saw that an entire peak of this mountain range was composed of unopened envelopes. She lifted a dozen or so of them off the top and randomly checked some postmarks in the middle of the pile. It looked as though Mrs. Jasko had not been taking care of business for at least a few months. With Mrs. Jasko's permission, she took some time to confirm her suspicions. After a few minutes, Michelle sighed, placed her palms on the table in front of her, and then did her best to explain the situation to Mrs. Jasko. Since her loan was seriously delinquent, the only sure way to prevent foreclosure was for Mrs. Jasko to pay off the loan in full. Michelle suspected from reviewing Mrs. Jasko's mail that while she had some income, she wouldn't have anything close to $35,000 in liquid assets. She couched her words carefully, being honest that the cause of the problem was Mrs. Jasko's lapse, but not confronting her directly with the likelihood that she was in the beginning stages of senility. In any case, Michelle now had an agenda that went beyond the profit she also hoped to make. She concluded with an honest plea, "Ma'am, I'd like to help you resolve this situation somehow." Mrs. Jasko had her fingers on her forehead again. "I'm so bewildered. I don't know what to do. Would you really help me?" No one else who came to the door offered to help. One of them had a very frightening beard. Michelle touched her reassuringly on the arm. "Yes, I will. I promise." Mrs. Jasko insisted on making Michelle a cup of tea before they talked further. "You're such a kind person," she said as she handed Michelle a cup, rattling in its saucer. "I could tell from the first moment I laid eyes on you." Michelle looked into the cup. There were flecks of something floating in the brown liquid. She didn't know what they were, but she was certain they weren't tea leaves. "But what will I do?" Mrs. Jasko whimpered. "I don't have $35,000. I have no family, none. Where will I go? What will I do?" Her whimper became a sob. Michelle sat down on the folding chair next to the card table and took Mrs. Jasko's free hand with her own. "Will you trust me now to help you?" She looked straight into Mrs. Jasko's red-rimmed blue eyes, praying that the other woman would use her own intuition. "Can you? Will you?" Mrs. Jasko begged. "I don't know anyone who can help me." Michelle let out a breath. She felt that she had probably cleared the first hurdle. She had a win-win plan, but of course she needed Mrs. Jasko to agree. Over tea, or at least over the cups, Michelle did her best to explain. Michelle would pay off the $35,000 and then help Mrs. Jasko move to Golden House. She wouldn't have to worry about cooking or cleaning anymore, let alone the bills, all of which was clearly beyond her now. Michelle had noticed several rather stale utility bills and guessed that Mrs. Jasko wasn't far from losing her phone and electricity. Not that it would matter if she lost her home first. "One of my best friends works there," she said. "She'll take good care of you. They take field trips twice a week, and there's a library. Or volunteers come in. They'll read to you. Mrs. Chasko's lips parted. She looked as though Michelle were describing heaven. But my little house here, I know. Michelle patted Mrs. Chasko's hand. What I would do is fix it up so that we could get the best price. I'll pay for that, and then after I sell it, we'll split the profits 50-50. Would you really do that for me? Mrs. Chasko asked. Yes, absolutely, said Michelle. I'll put it in writing and we'll both sign it, in case. Well, it's just an extra way to reassure you that I'll do my part. Michelle guiltily admitted to herself that she wanted to make sure that Mrs. Chasko did hers, too. Oh, thank you, said the woman. Thank you so much. That had been 3 days ago. The property did indeed appraise for around $100,000, and it was going to take at least $3,000 to do the fix-up and another $2,000 to bring the paint up to Michelle's standards. So, Sam. Sitting in Sam's private office, Michelle took out a notepad and pen from her briefcase. Now is the time for you to share your big secret. How do I get the $35,000 in cash to be able to pay off the original mortgage holder, plus the extra $5,000 to fix it up? You've been telling us for the last several weeks that all the money we ever needed is just a phone call away. I'm ready now for that phone number. She made a show of waving her pen over the notepad. Sam put her hands behind her head and tilted her chair back. Butterfly, no matter where you are in the country, there is cash available for the right kind of deal, and it can happen quickly. Go out to the reception area and bring back the Denver Post. We put a fresh copy out every morning. Michelle did as she was told and returned in a moment with the newspaper. Open it to the classifieds. Sam came around her desk as Michelle sat cross-legged on the floor and spread the paper out on the coffee table. I want you to look for a section of the paper called Real Estate Wanted or Money to Lend. Either one will probably do, Sam said. The first of the categories Michelle found was Money to Lend. It was a column with about a dozen ads in it, placed by various different types of lenders. There appeared to be larger lending institutions, smaller lending institutions, and ads run by private individuals. Sam explained, this is one of the fastest ways to find cash. You just look in the newspaper to find those people who are willing to lend it. Well, duh. But, Michelle objected, I can't qualify for a loan. My credit is terrible. You already know that. She frowned. And when you first brought this up, Jeremy and I made that pretty plain. That's the beauty of dealing with these people in the paper, Sam interrupted. They don't care about your credit rating. They only care what the property looks like and whether it can carry the loan balance. In this particular instance, the loan balance is less than half of the value of the property. Many of these people will be happy to loan you the money. Not to be cynical about human beings or anything, but what's in it for them? That's easy. They're going to charge a high interest rate, and they're going to charge you fees up front. We call them points. As you make your phone calls here, you'll find that the interest rate is going to be between 10 and 20%, and they are going to charge you between 10 and 20 points for the privilege of using their money. What's a point? A point is 1% of the value of the money that you are borrowing. You need to borrow $40,000 for this property, right? So they're going to probably take 10 points as a fee. So if you're borrowing $40,000, the fees would be $4,000. $4,000? Michelle put her hand on the classifieds as if it were the money she had been asked to part with. All depends on your point of view, Butterfly, Sam chuckled. The alternative is you won't be able to buy the property at all, and therefore you'll lose out on a $60,000 profit. Or should we say the $30,000, which is your share of the deal you made with Mrs. J. Michelle looked back down at the ads. These folks aren't called hard money lenders for nothing. This is not the way you finance your kids' college education. What helps make it work for you is that you won't have this borrowed money for very long. Like here, what you'll probably want to do is borrow $45,000 against this property, which you should be able to do without any trouble at all. That's the money you have to pay back. But the lender will only give you 40,500. The extra 4,500 is the points. That's okay, because you're going to take the 40,000, immediately pay off the delinquent first mortgage, and use the balance to fix the property to get it into good condition. Michelle was indeed looking at the transaction in a new light. So somebody would actually lend me money so that I could buy this property. That is what I've been trying to tell you. Sam briefly regarded her new nail tips, painted in a rich plum color. It's another win-win if you think about it. Figure out the rate of return these lenders are getting. When you add it all up, they earn approximately 24% on their money. Not bad, hmm? It's even better if they foreclose, because then they get an extra $60,000 profit. So much for my win. You win if you do what you're supposed to do. You couldn't buy it any other way. Michelle looked back down at the classifieds column. She was playing with the big boys now, and she was just a little scared. A little? Then she had an idea. Hey, Sam, why don't you be my hard money lender? Talk about win-win. If I'm going to pay those fees, I'd much rather pay them to you. And maybe you'd shave off a couple of those points. Little Eagle, you've got to get out of the nest pretty soon. The best thing for you is to learn how to play the real estate game in the real world without falling back on me too much. That way, when I can't be here with you for whatever reason, you'll be able to go to any city in the United States, start from scratch, and build up another fortune. There's one more thing. Sam put her arm loosely around Michelle's shoulder. Their faces were very close together. I want to tell you that you've made me proud. You're not a millionaire yet, but I believe you will be, because you are taking the enlightened path, and the universe will support you. From what you've told me, it sounds like you're helping this woman even more than she's helping you. Instead of getting more and more isolated and then losing everything and ending up God knows where, she's going to have a new life. Michelle couldn't bring herself to raise her eyes. Thank you, she said humbly. The escrow officer came to Golden House with the paperwork for Michelle and Mrs. Jasko to sign. Mrs. Jasko seemed less confused since her move, and though she signed the papers with trembling hands, when the officer handed her check, she fully understood its meaning. Michelle, you've saved my life, she said. I'm so happy here. Michelle was touched, but she was too distracted by the sight of her own check, her share of the profits, to give her full attention to Mrs. Jasko. She had never once in her life seen a check this large. But there it was, in black ink against a pale green background. $29,014.62. It was a long way from a million, but it was a start. And it was all about leverage. If, on the next deal, she could find a bigger property in trouble, she could make even more in the same period of time. Meanwhile, this $30,000 was already spoken for. The first 10% of it was going to tithing. With Sam's prompting, Michelle had decided to split her first tithing check, half going to a local church and half to the Horatio Alger Foundation to provide college scholarships to deserving, underprivileged students. Another portion of the check would go to reimburse Sam for some of the expenses she had incurred in helping them get started. The rest would help finance another property that she had already taken steps to acquire. As Sam kept emphasizing, it was a numbers game. The more lines we can get in the water, she said, the greater the chance we'll get a bite. We'll try to reach them in every way we can think of, ads in the paper, direct mail, trips to the county courthouse, out-of-state owners, banks, foreclosure sales. We've got to circulate if we want to percolate. And so, one night, the whole team had gathered in the tiny living room of her bungalow to stuff and stamp almost 300 envelopes addressed to the owners of properties that had gone into default. Michelle had written the letter. It was a form letter, to be sure, but one that she had composed carefully to convey the team's genuine concern for the mortgagee's problems. After all, It hadn't been long since Michelle had been in the same situation. It had been Michelle's idea to include a photo of the team. Sam had a digital camera, and they asked Sam's assistant, Stephanie, to shoot them outside under a tree. They all dressed informally. Jeremy wanted to stand behind Summer and make donkey ears, but Sam drew the line there. "They want to see that we're real people, not crazy people," she said tartly. "I've never sent out letters like this before," Renee said. "What kind of response do you think we might get?" Michelle guessed. "Maybe 20 or 30? Sam chuckled. "In your dreams, maybe. If we get one or two good deals out of these 300, we should be doing backflips. These people will have already received 5 or 6 letters, and some of them will have already resolved their financial crisis. That's why it's worth our time to hand address these envelopes. That alone is going to get a much higher percentage opened. Now I want to see you all use your best penmanship." And so the party labored on into the evening, comforted by a fire in the fireplace and soothed by classical music from hidden speakers. Sam was right. The return on their mass mailing was small. Out of the inquiries they did receive, though, Michelle and Renee had no trouble choosing their next project. It started as a call from a woman in response to their letter. She was the single mother of 5 children. When she and her husband had divorced, she had bought him out of his share of their home so that her children would have the stability of staying in the same place and continuing at the same schools. Also, it was a large home, which is what she needed for her large family. To buy her husband out, she had refinanced, leaving her with payments that were a bit of a stretch, but still within reach, given her salary. Then the hospital where she worked had financial problems and downsized. She lost her job and then missed a payment. Letters began to flood her mailbox, offering to buy her home at a substantial discount, her reward being that her credit would not be ruined. But most had a threatening tone. Then she opened Michelle's, saw the photo of her eclectic team, and read a letter that was sensitive to her situation. "That's why I called you," she told Michelle near tears. "What I need to do is move into an apartment, but I don't even have money for the move. And if I don't do something PDQ, I'm going to miss the second payment. If my credit's ruined, I'll have a hard time coming back from that." Michelle and Renee met with the woman and offered to help in any way they could. She was confident that she'd get a new job before too long, but the ongoing maintenance of a house would put her over the top. "The kids can share rooms," she said. "I've got to keep my priorities straight. I was trying so hard to make it the same as it was before Derek left, but we all have to face facts." She needed physical and financial help moving, and an extra $1,500 to catch up on bills that she'd been unable to pay since being laid off. Michelle and Renee agreed immediately. "I'm going to ask you a personal favor, too," the woman said, looking both relieved and a little anxious at the same time. "I know you're professional real estate investors. Will you keep on the lookout for me for another house? Something a little smaller with smaller payments that I could back into maybe sometime next year when I have a little saved up?" To which Michelle replied, "You can trust us to make every effort on your behalf. It's the least we can do." They drew up the paperwork the next day, and Michelle walked out of the escrow office, the proud owner of $50,000 in equity. It remained to turn this equity into cash. The mom had left the house impeccable, so all Michelle and Renee had to do was shampoo the carpets, paint the front door, and put a for sale sign on the building. Within 2 weeks, they got an offer of $35,000 for a quick closing. Suddenly, Michelle had $60,000 in the bank. She began to think about what colors she would paint Nikki's and Hannah's new rooms. Michelle's euphoria did not last long. It was that very evening that Tilly called to tell her that the Hasbro deal had fallen through. Michelle couldn't think of anything to say until she finally sputtered, "What?" "The committee had told me it was a sure thing. Well, wouldn't you know that the kibosh came from the one executive who hadn't been at our presentation. He pointed out that a similar toy had been produced by a small competitor and hadn't done very well. Michelle finished Tilly's thought. So he wasn't there to raise his objection and hear it overcome. We certainly would have overcome it, Tilly said peevishly. I know the piece of junk he's talking about, and the Always Together Bear is not only better, it's different. I pointed that out to the young man who called, but he thought it would be too difficult to reassemble the committee. Tilly, we've got to consider that the first rejection. Tilly chuckled. I thought you might say something like that, dear. I have to admit I was pretty down when I first got the news. That's why you haven't heard from me sooner. I took old Betsy, her nickname for her wheelchair, down to the garden here for a little stroll. I just can't take it for a final no. Sometimes people in these companies get to talking in their little groups, and it becomes an almost informal committee meeting where they do reconsider. No, Michelle said firmly. That sounds good, but it also sounds too slow. We have to get this thing going now. Tell me, Tilly, there must be another way. How about taking it to another company? Well, Tilly hesitated. There is Hasbro's main competitor, but I've never had as much luck with them, and I don't have the same contacts there. So? Michelle was getting excited now. Her intuition was telling her that she was on the right road. Our goal isn't necessarily even to get a deal with the competitor. Of course not, Tilly said brightly, understanding Michelle all at once. Our goal is to get Hasbro to know there's another toy company interested. Don't you fret now, dear. Those executives were wrapped around our fingers at that meeting, and we've got 20 fingers between us waiting to snare them again. 68 days. If Michelle had ever doubted Sam's belief in negative and positive precession, she certainly believed in it passionately now. Look, she thought proudly as she surveyed the buzzing headquarters of the Millionaire Eagles, the place formerly known as Samantha Ann Monroe's conference room. Everyone here on a Saturday, working their derrieres off. Jeremy was the only one of the team not present. He found it hard to concentrate when this many of them were in the same room together and had gone home to work from his computer there. Michelle congratulated herself that she had worked with integrity, always putting that ahead of short-term profits, and that it had led to positive results. Tilly was preparing to do her best to get the Always Together Bear produced, and if Michelle's real estate profits continued at the same exponential rate, she would be a millionaireess many times over. The idyll ended only a moment later when Jeremy burst into the conference room, looking like a mad scientist from a grade B horror film, his hair sticking out in wild tufts. It's crashed, he moaned. Michelle had the horrible fantasy that maybe he was talking about the NASDAQ, except that it was Saturday. What about the Nikkei? Our website. Jeremy plunked in the nearest chair and let his head sink between his knees. After a moment, he raised it. It's worse than you think. Why don't you tell us? Michelle asked. Her voice sounded distant in her own ears. I went to log on and it kept telling me, page requested not available. To make a long story short, I finally found out that our stupid internet service provider decided to upgrade to new servers, right? They crashed out a whole bunch of web pages, including ours. My first thought was that they must have backed everything up, but no dice. Jeremy, Michelle began, you backed everything up, didn't you? Jeremy put his head back in his hands. Oh, boy. Summer slapped her hand against her forehead. I can't believe you could be so dumb. Me, Jeremy shouted and jumped to his feet. Me? Listen to her. Summer, you've been riding on my coattail since we started this project. You spend half your time gabbing to your sister in Phoenix and the other half doing your freaking nails, and then when we make a presentation, you stand up there like you did 70% of the work on good looks alone. Even that day we were passing out business cards. How dare you? Summer leapt up as well. You have been hogging all the glory from day one. While we're on the subject of taking credit, how about money loves you? You showed everyone that list of government articles because that was the stuff you found, and somehow you just didn't bother to show all the stuff I found. How many times have I said to you, I don't know that much about computers. You have to help me help you. But no, you've acted like what you're doing is man's work. You're a chauvinist pig. Michelle glanced at the others. Courtney and Renee looked very uncomfortable, but Sam was calm. That's enough, you two, she said, her voice steady but loud enough to shout the combatants down. I'm not having any of this negativity in my place. Michelle was ashamed to admit that her more immediate concern was the website, not Jeremy and Summer's feud. And what exactly are you going to do about it? Jeremy challenged Sam, folding his arms across his chest. Michelle saw the other women cringe, but not Sam. She gazed steadily at Jeremy until he visibly wilted. Mr. Cavalieri, you sit yourself down right now and take a few deep breaths. The first thing you have to do is take some responsibility for what's happened. What about it? What about the way he's been treating me, Summer wailed. Missy, you sit down and wait your turn, Sam said. One thing at a time. Jeremy, who didn't back up the data? The ISP, he replied defiantly. Then, under Sam's continued gaze, and me. Right. Now what can you learn from that? Jeremy mumbled like a guilty schoolboy. To back up the data. He shuffled his feet a little. Then he went on in a slightly different tone. I mean, it's still a big drag, but rebuilding the website won't be like totally starting from scratch, since I've learned so much. Summer was sitting with her arms folded across her chest and her legs crossed. Her foot bobbed impatiently in the air. Great, she said. So I guess this is everybody's way of acknowledging that I've had no part in this. No one said that. Sam was grave, but she lightened up almost immediately with a gesture toward Michelle. I'd like to turn the proceedings over to Michelle. Me? Michelle gulped. She was about to demur, but then she knew that it was a challenge that Sam wanted her to accept. It felt like an important one. She knew that the day was coming when Sam would not be at her side so often. She would need to be able to handle these things on her own. Michelle took a deep breath. Okay, let's start with you, Jeremy. What isn't working between you and Summer? I think I've said it. She hasn't pulled her weight from the start. She shows up at meetings late. I call her and she doesn't call back. I explain things to her 20 times. That's so unfair, Summer burst out. Michelle jumped in. I know it's difficult, but I'm going to ask both of you not to interrupt each other. Actually, though, Summer, it is your turn. But try to stick to the facts and keep the accusations out of it. Huh, Summer grunted. Then, after a pause, she responded to what Jeremy had said. What's a fact is that Mr. Bigshot loves to show off what he knows. He drops big terms like HTML and RAM and ROM and ream, and then when I ask him for an explanation, he acts like I'm a dumb blonde who can't understand anything. As for not being on time, I have been late once or twice, but not by more than a few minutes and not any more often than he is. He just always assumes that what he's doing is important and worth me waiting for, and what I'm doing is my freaking nails, as he so charmingly put it. Inwardly, Michelle thought that both Summer and Jeremy had valid complaints against each other. Jeremy had an arrogant side, an attitude that might well have been behind his failure to back up his original data. The positive side of his arrogance was that he was able to think big, something that she had come to more slowly, with Sam's encouragement. As for Summer, she was easily distracted, and Michelle suspected that she had been late more than once or twice. But when she was late, it was probably because she was helping a Golden House resident with her manicure, not waiting for her own nail polish to dry. Summer was as conscientious and caring a person as Michelle had ever known. Here's something I want to say to both of you, Michelle said. Do you all remember a discussion Sam had with us early on about the definition of marketing? Renee and Courtney nodded, but they knew that the question was directed at Jeremy and Summer. It was Jeremy who answered. I was the one who asked Sam that. She said, The definition of marketing is building relationships. That's right, Sam said. Summer chimed in, probably wanting to show that she had been paying attention to the discussion, too. Sam, you said unless you build relationships with your clientele, you'll only have one interaction with them. To be successful, you need multiple interactions. I think you have that word for word, Sam smiled. Very good, Michelle agreed. Now let me ask you, what do you think the definition of communication is? She glanced very quickly at Sam. At a recent session at The Rock, she had discussed the issue with her mentor. Jeremy shifted from foot to foot. Isn't it? I mean, it has to be telling somebody to do something. You're good at that, Summer said. Jeremy, I can see why you're getting into trouble. Here's a better definition. Communication is the response you get. Jeremy wrinkled his brow as if he didn't understand. So, continued Michelle, it follows that if you don't get the response you want, you haven't communicated properly. What response do you want from Summer? I want her to be a strong member of our team. That means being here when I need her. I want her to learn more about computers and not mess up. I want her to come up with her own ideas, not just wait for me to give her instructions. You see how he... Summer started, but Michelle took over. Jeremy, let's start with that last communication. Summer isn't your employee, let alone your slave. She's your partner, but that's not how you're treating her. Huh, Jeremy grunted, just as Summer had a moment before. So how do you think you can get the response you want from her? Jeremy thought a moment before he answered. I can be more patient about explaining things. And not so smug? Summer asked, but her tone was lighter now. And not so smug, Jeremy agreed. See, I'm proud of the stuff I know about computers. And I guess that was my way of showing it off. And I can ask you for your input. He was talking directly to Summer now. This sounds very promising, Michelle said. But Summer, it works both ways. What response do you want from Jeremy? I want him to treat me with respect, and I want him to include me in what's supposed to be our team. And how do you get that response? Well, when I don't understand something, I don't need to be ashamed to ask for more clarification. We're all learning here, and I can take initiative without waiting for his approval. That's right, Michelle agreed. I think one of the reasons that you've been getting this unwanted response from Jeremy is that you have communicated to him that you're the dumb blonde waiting for her orders, if I may be so blunt. For the first time since Michelle's mediation had begun, Summer and Jeremy looked at each other. They both seemed a little wary, but then Jeremy ventured, "One response I always want from you, Summer, is to see you smile." I think I can pull that off, Summer replied, and she bestowed on all of them one of her radiant, ingenuous smiles. I have faith in both of you, Michelle said. Okay, Eaglets, Sam said. Looks like we're ready to get back to work. And there's plenty of that to do, Courtney said, but she sounded as relieved and happy as Michelle knew everyone was. They could all bask in that for a while, and forget that the website had crashed. That one-third of their streams of income had dried up, at least for now. 67 days. Michelle entered the main lobby of the Golden House, anxiously looking for Tilly, who had left an urgent message saying that she needed to see Michelle immediately. Michelle was dreading the news, wondering if the toy deal was dead. She walked into the lounge where she had first met Tilly. She remembered how crazy she thought the old woman had been, babbling on about being a president. Now she had actually been with Tilly to the offices of one of the largest companies in the world. Not only had Tilly not been crazy, but she turned out to have one of the sharpest minds Michelle had ever encountered. Tilly rolled into the lounge, a somber look on her face, but her eyes gave her away. The corners of her mouth were lifting. Like a little child, she could not hide her delight. My dear, said Tilly, breaking into a smile, we did it. What do you mean, Tilly? We did the impossible. They're going to do the toy. What happened, Tilly? The last time I talked to you, they had rejected it. As soon as the higher-ups at Hasbro got wind that another company might get involved, they met again in committee. Just as I thought, they've decided to fast-track it. Of course, the call I made to the CEO didn't hurt. What happens now? They're drawing up the contracts as we speak. We should have our advance within 14 days. Advance? We get an advance on our future royalties. In the old days, I used to regularly receive advances of $100,000, $200,000, sometimes $250,000. That's changed a little bit lately with the tightening of the economy. But because of the rivalry with the other company, and because of my history with Hasbro, the CEO didn't skip a beat when I told him on the phone that we wanted a $300,000 advance. This was the first time that Michelle had heard any numbers, and it took her breath away. $300,000. I gave him a little room to negotiate. He countered back almost immediately, which was very uncharacteristic of him, and agreed to pay $250,000. I went ahead and made the decision without consulting you. I hope you don't mind. Michelle had to sit down on the couch to absorb this news. If this toy is as successful as I think it will be, it's going to make us both millions of dollars. Hasbro wouldn't have made this decision if they hadn't felt strongly about it. Oh, Tilly, I just can't tell you how excited I am. Michelle was already calculating in her mind what she was going to do with her half of the advance. I want you to know that I had made a commitment to give away 10% of my half of the money to charity. Tilly said, and I have just the place for you to put it, Hasbro Children's Hospital. It's located in Providence, Rhode Island. It's one of their favorite charities. I'll match your gift. That'll make the CEO happy. Forgive me for asking, but after this first check, how soon will other checks begin arriving? Michelle was trying to figure out how much she could count on toward the $1 million for Erickson. Oh, we won't see any more money until the middle of next year. But if my predictions come true, there will be steady royalty checks each quarter for many years to come. This pronouncement was devastating to Michelle. The initial news had thrilled her, but now she wondered how she could have been so naive. How can we parlay this into the $1 million, Tilly? This isn't even close to what I need. Don't you worry, dear. I've negotiated to sell Hasbro only a portion of the master license, the mass merchandising rights. Hasbro can sell to the big chains, but I've retained the rights to sell directly to the gift market. There are thousands of smaller stores and gift shops across the country where we can sell the Always Together Bear. I know, said Michelle. My friend Courtney has a store and goes to the gift shows every single year. I'm sure she'll know exactly what we need to do to market our bear. But how can we sell something we don't have? Hasbro has agreed to include our toys with their order so we can get the lowest possible volume price. We get to pick up our toys and pay for them when they land here in America. How do we pay for them? Michelle sat forward, interested. We plow our advance back in. With that amount, we can buy approximately 60,000 toys. If we sell them to the gift market, and I'm confident that 60,000 is just a start, we can earn a profit of about $10 a toy. $600,000 was a huge sum, but even if everything went off without a hitch, Michelle was still going to be short. She knew she had to rely on her other streams of income, her own real estate dealings, and Jeremy's internet ambitions. She had, at least, growing confidence in the former. What's our next step, Tilly? Tilly proceeded to give her a more detailed description of how a toy goes from an idea in someone's head to a physical product on the shelf at a store like Toys R Us. Tilly was having a fine old time, reliving past glories and demonstrating her expertise, but most of the words were unfamiliar to Michelle. Production patterns, counter samples, gross units. Tilly concluded with a final comment. You don't know how lucky you are, dear. This only happens once in a million years. Frankly, I honestly don't know if it's me or if there are some forces in the universe that are combining to make this happen. I'd say it's both, Michelle said. Well, I never take less credit than what's my due, but still, you'd better say your prayers tonight. 63 days. Michelle and Renee tracked down their third property as they were driving along a tree-lined avenue in one of Riverdale's wealthier neighborhoods, a community with its own golf course, where million-dollar homes were the norm. Actually, it would be fairer to say that Michelle tracked it down, since Renee was opposed to the purchase from that first day. Michelle now had radar that seemed to detect for sale signs a block away. When she saw this one, she quickly pulled over. Why are you stopping? Renee asked. This neighborhood is way out of our price range, Michelle. This for sale sign had a little box underneath containing information flyers. Michelle grabbed a sheet for herself and one for Renee, who had rather grudgingly joined her on the lawn. We can't afford a house like this, Renee reiterated as she looked at the sheet again. Mickey, may I draw attention to the fact that the monthly payments on this would be astronomical? We'd be out of money in just a few months. Don't forget I have some experience here. Properties like this can stay on the market longer than you might think. You have to remember that rich people can afford to build their own dream homes, and they prefer to do that rather than moving into someone else's. Besides, look at this place. Michelle knew what Renee was talking about. Given the neighborhood, it was surprising that the community would allow the house to get so run down. The yard was overgrown with weeds, the paint was peeling from a bad paint job, and the front entry was piled with old newspapers. Obviously, the house not only was vacant, it had been for many months. But Michelle countered, isn't this exactly what we're looking for? The worst house in the best neighborhood? And if I've learned anything from Sam, it's that when you have a situation where other people see problems, then what you need are problem solvers. That's us. Okay, Renee said reluctantly, but it looks to me like you'd be spending all of your profit fixing this place up. It has money pit written all over it. But Renee, Michelle insisted, I've got a hunch about this one. She tapped her chest. A strong hunch. Huh, was Renee's bemused response. Well, you are the queen of hunches now. From the front lawn, the front weed patch, Renee called it, still a bit grumpy, they called the realtor whose name was on the sign. The call was forwarded to her cell phone, and it turned out that she was in her car, just a few blocks away. See, Michelle beamed, it's falling into place. A few moments later, the realtor pulled up in a black BMW. She was about 50 and stylish in an understated way, with a tailored black suit and short salt-and-pepper hair. After cursory introductions, she let them in. The inside turned out to be much worse than Michelle had expected. Whoever had decorated it had done so with a misguided notion of saving money, or extremely bad taste. The living room and hallway colors ran to hospital green, while the kitchen cabinetry was painted a shade of yellow that clashed hideously with the avocado appliances. Deferred maintenance was too nice an expression for the condition of the poorly kept interior. There were stains on the wall from a leak in the roof. Tile was cracked and chipped, and the toilets looked like they were from the Truman administration. With each room she inspected, Renee shook her head more and more impatiently, and each time Michelle insisted on continuing, she sighed. At the end of the tour, she took Michelle aside to insist that the property was truly not worth considering. But doesn't that depend on the financial background, Michelle whispered. You'd buy it for a dollar, wouldn't you? I'm not sure about that, Renee whispered under her breath, but Michelle ignored her and turned back to the realtor to ask for details that weren't on the flyer. The realtor reviewed the circumstances. The owner has bought and moved to another property in Riverdale, and has kept this property for over a year. It's been vacant that whole time. She's had many different offers on it, but has turned them down. They just weren't quite enough. The property has recently been appraised at $1.2 million. The mortgage balance is approximately $800,000. She's a wealthy woman, so the $8,000 a month payment doesn't seem to bother her that much. She's just waiting for the price that she wants. Renee smiled. That's just what I told my friend here. The payments would be too high. Sorry to take up your time. She held out her hand. But Michelle gently pushed it down. Not so fast, she said cheerfully. Then back to the realtor. Tell me about the mortgage. The realtor referred to the flyer. We think it's possible for a new buyer to be able to assume it. I would like to make an offer, Michelle said, remembering her training from Sam. We're real estate investors. If the deal is right, we could move very quickly. My offer is $805,000. I'd like for you to write that up right here on the kitchen table, and I'd be happy to sign it and give you an earnest money check. Renee gasped. She tugged at Michelle's sleeve, but Michelle shook her off. The realtor didn't seem all that eager to pursue the offer either. Well, $805,000, that's certainly not going to be enough to cover the mortgage, my commission, the closing costs, and there'll be other fees. You know, Michelle reminded her politely but firmly, you're legally obligated to present any and all offers on a property. So I'd like to make a firm offer of $805,000. I'd be happy to give you a check for $1,000 for earnest money. That won't be enough, said the realtor. We'll let the seller determine whether she wants more earnest money or not. If she'll accept my price, perhaps we might be willing to increase our earnest money to give the seller more reason to believe that we're serious about this offer. We would be happy to give you 3 days to check with the seller to see if that would be something she might be willing to accept. 3 days later, the realtor called Michelle back on the phone. There was an icy undertone to her voice as she informed Michelle that the woman who owned the home had finally grown tired of carrying it and recently decided that the best option was to sell it to the next person who made her an offer. Between property taxes and the uncertainty of the market, she might just lose more if she waited longer. I don't understand, the realtor said, sounding more as if she were speaking to herself. I have taken 3 other offers to the same woman, all in excess of $900,000, and she turned them down flat. And yet, with hardly a second thought, she accepted your offer, knowing she would have to come up with money out of her own pocket just to be able to close this transaction and move on with her life. If I would have known she would be willing to accept this kind of price, I myself might have been willing to buy it. This is what happens when you have intuition on your side, Michelle congratulated herself. Of the realtor, she thought, maybe if you weren't so busy waltzing with your yabbits, you would have thought of buying the property before I did. The closing happened a week later, and true to the realtor's calculation, the seller had to write a large check to be able to buy her way out of the transaction, while Michelle walked away with $400,000 in equity. That's when the problems began. According to more than one contractor's estimate, it was going to take over $50,000 of repairs and renovations to bring the house up to market standards. And if Michelle used all of the Millionaire Eagle's money from the Jasco deal, she would certainly be putting the group's profits at risk. But that wasn't the worst of it. As Michelle got into the fix-up, she discovered that $50,000 wasn't going to be nearly enough. And after about a month, she was short in her construction estimate to the tune of at least $20,000. What had seemed to Michelle to be a slam-dunk way to make some fast cash had now indeed turned into a money pit.
This book is continued on Disc 10.